This afternoon, or this early evening, I'm here to tell you guys about a project that Prevention Institute is leading called Unity Urban Networks to Increase Thriving Youth. And I'm glad I'm going at the end because I'm going to report on 6 years of efforts to promote a public health approach to preventing violence and just some progress that we've been able to make in that. So I do not have any disclosures. This is the first time I've ever had to do this. I don't have any disclosures. But what I do want to talk about is about a year ago, I went to West Oakland to do a site visit with this school where the kids had gone out, the youth had gone out, and they had done a photo voice project. Do you all know what photo voice is? And so they had made this presentation about the conditions in their community. And, you know, we're talking about individuals here. A lot of our focus is on individuals mostly. There's some about the community. But if we step back and we think about what are the conditions that these kids are living in on a day-to-day basis and how they're having to navigate to get to school, get home, get to the store, it's crazy. And so at the end of the day, we had five of the kids, and they all gave a presentation about what they liked about their community and what they didn't like and what could be better and whatnot. And, you know, it just, their feelings of hopelessness just were very strong. And the part that really kind of got to me was at the very end, when we were all done and we were getting ready to leave, there had been a shooting like less than 100 feet or 100 yards away from the front door of the school. And the shocking part of this is that the six of us that were visiting, they kept us there. They wouldn't let us leave, but they let the kids go because they knew how to get home. They knew where they had to go to get home. Whereas us, you know, we parked our cars, you know, six blocks away. They were like, you know, you guys won't survive in this neighborhood. And one of the comments that one of the youth made that really stuck with me also was that when they left the neighborhood to go to visit cousins or something in another city, they could feel the level of tension just go down. And then as they came back from that visit into their neighborhood, they could feel it going up. And I think a lot of what you were describing earlier, those feelings that they have about being on point, you know, always having to be aware, that's just a type of trauma that needs to be addressed at the community level. One of my colleagues that helps on the Unity Project, his name is Howard Pinderhughes. I don't know how many of you know him. He's a sociologist that teaches at UC San Francisco. And he doesn't call it post-traumatic stress disorder. He calls it persistent stress disorder because there's a level of stress that just doesn't go down. And so this is kind of the backdrop for what I'm talking about. So, you know, we're talking about life in the killing zone. What does it mean? What's going on? And then on top of that, how do people start to look at our youth that live in those communities? You know, all of a sudden we become dehumanized and it becomes them. It's not us, you know, the teen violence. They're wild in the streets. You know, a certain face comes up when people start thinking of teen violence. And it's almost like we're blaming the people that are living in these conditions for what's going on there. And, you know, we need to take a step back. So at Prevention Institute, where I'm a program manager, we are pushing very heavily this idea of prevention, primary prevention, getting out to the community level. We want to stop violence before it occurs. And we know that prevention works. I'm talking to a room full of public health people. So we all know prevention works. Here's some examples. And one example we use with more lay audiences is the idea of car seats. Like, I can remember when I was growing up, I'm going to give away my age here, I remember sitting on my dad's lap and driving the car. You know, we didn't have car seats back then, but things have changed. To the point now when we see something like this, you know, we're calling CPS. We're calling, you know, this is not acceptable. Our norms have changed. So, you know, when we talk about norms, you know, it's more than a habit. It's sanctioned behavior. It's based in culture and tradition. It's taken for granted, you know, all of these things. But what's happening is there's this warped sense of normalcy that's coming to our communities. Why is it that we accept these levels of violence? Why is it that we accept, and I, I don't mean to put it like we accept, but why is it that it is accepted? So, you know, the ideas of one generation become the instincts of the next. And here's some kids that are playing in Sarajevo. This is after the war was over. Bosnia was fought. This is after that civil war was over. But this is what those kids had grown up in that. And this is what they played after, you know, this is when they go out and play with their friends. This is what they were playing. So, you know, again, norms. I get back to the norms. I have a four-year-old son, and he cracks us up sometimes. You know, he sits there. He was watching the Three Amigos, and you know, you guys ever seen that Three Amigos where they go like this, and like this, or whatever? So my son does that, and the whole family just starts cracking up that he does it. Mijito, mijito, come over, do it. Show your aunt, show your grandma, show, you know. And he goes and he does it. And so I went to visit with a cousin of mine. And this is a cousin that hasn't had a lot of the advantages and opportunities that I've had growing up. And, you know, we went in there, and his kid, son, same age as mine, was learning how to throw gang signs. You know, and it's just a norm. It's just this normalcy thing that's going on there. And it's just, I looked at my son and I looked at his son, and, you know, you can kind of see that they're is almost a predetermined trajectory that's based on this sense of norms, this environment. So we approach urban violence. It is an epidemic. It's an epidemic that we can get in front of. And y'all public, I'm an urban planner, so this is kind of new to me. But all your public health people, no epidemic has ever been resolved paying attention to the treatment of the affected individual. And so when we talk about a public health approach to violence, we're focusing on prevention. It's population-based, it attempts to reduce risks, and it works to increase protective factors. This is, from what I understand, Public Health 101, right? Okay. And we're also starting to get some traction with some law enforcement, because that, you know, that seems to be, if there's a seesaw or a scale where we allocate our resources, it's law enforcement and it's public health. Law enforcement and public health. And we've got some law enforcement officials that are recognizing this. She said, this is Kamala Harris, the Attorney General for the state of California. She says, let's think of crime as an epidemic. Crime should be understood as something we can prevent if we focus on the early indicators. And it doesn't take a rocket scientist or a genius to predict who's going to end up being a victim or a perpetrator of crime. We can't simply react to crime after it occurs as the most effective method of reducing crime. We have to not only react, but invest in preventing crime before it occurs. And so here's sort of those scales that I was talking about. Criminal justice, a lot of the resources go towards punishment, suppression, after the fact, maybe some behavior modification, a little bit of pure primary prevention. Public health, on the other hand, how'd that happen? We're approaching it from a different perspective. You know, we're stressing the upfront, you know, way upfront. These upfront, in the thick, and after the fact, these are terms that some youth in Philadelphia recommended to us when we kept going out and making presentations about primary, secondary, and tertiary prevention. So we're trying to move the approaches towards the public health approach. And so this works. In Minneapolis, anybody here from Minneapolis? No? Okay, in Minneapolis, they actually were able to put together a blueprint where they brought together multiple sectors to coordinate their efforts in the community. And they made four goals with this blueprint that they developed. One was to connect all youth to trusted adults, to intervene at the first sign of the risk for violence, to restore youth who had gone down the wrong path, and to unlearn the culture of violence. And in the first 2 years, they had juvenile justice rates go down over 40%. And National League of Cities is now recognizing Minneapolis for its outstanding efforts. And so this is kind of like the model of what we talk about in Unity, which is it's a project, it's a program, it's an initiative that builds support for effective, scalable, sustainable efforts to prevent violence before it occurs so that urban youth can thrive in safe environments with ample opportunities and supportive relationships. So Unity, the lead partners, I'm going to talk a little bit more about the initiative right now. The lead partners are Prevention Institute, Harvard School of Public Health, UCLA School of Public Health, and UC San Francisco. And we've got support from the CDC, the California Wellness Foundation, and CRESGI, the CRESGI Foundation. And we have a national consortium that has over 300 members from cities across the country, and we have a Unity City Network that just came to our offices last week. We had over 18 cities represented, some of the largest cities in the country. These are the co-chairs, Deborah Prothostith from Harvard, and Larry Cohen, and Billy Weiss from UCLA. So what we do in Unity is we coordinate the Unity City Network. We develop trainings, tools, and provide consultations. We help cities make the case, because a lot of times, especially in the budgeting process, they put public health approach and law enforcement at opposite ends, and there's a tug of war. So a lot of times we're brought in to help make the case about why we should be investing in prevention. These are a number of our cities, and they're participating in various degrees. Like I said, Minneapolis is one of our blueprint cities. New Orleans, anyone here from New Orleans? Now, New Orleans is really starting out on a really ambitious plan. They just released it a couple weeks ago. So what we started with is we did an assessment of youth violence prevention activities in the U.S., and we did interviews with 15 of the 45 largest cities, mayors, police chiefs, public health directors, school superintendents, and what we found was that law enforcement and criminal justice are the most prevalent strategies used in cities to address violence. Public health departments are not generally included in city strategies. Most cities lacked a comprehensive strategy where different departments, different sectors were working together. Cities with the greatest coordinated approach also had the lowest rates of youth violence. And so we also developed something called the Unity Roadmap that basically walks through and says, what are the elements that one needs to be able to put a local collaboration together to prevent violence. And they were partnerships, programs, and strategies. And I need to say that it's not a program. You know, a lot of times people will call us up and they'll say, okay, what's the program? What do we need to do to prevent violence? And it's not a program. It is a broad approach, a comprehensive approach that actually gets at reducing the violence. Our cities developed the Unity Policy Platform. It talks about, you know, from the ground, you know, what they see, what's needed. Street outreach and interruption strategies, universal school-based violence prevention, promoting mental health to address substance abuse, reducing young children's exposure to violence, and community building. So ceasefire is one of a very strong interrupter-based model that we refer to. And then the OVEAS Bullying Prevention Program, this is a school-based program. It's a universal program. Like these two different programs, even though I said earlier that no one program will do it, these programs will help you in the short term to stem the violence, to stop the violence. I'm getting the wrap-up sign. So I'll just say, you know, violence is preventable. We in some of our cities, we've seen that schools can reduce violence by 15% in as little as 6 months. Shootings and killings can be reduced by 40 to 70%. Minneapolis is our signature city. Cities with more multi-jurisdictional coordination and communication have lower violence rates. And then this is Natoya Walker, who works for the Office of the Mayor. She goes, we know after decades of experiencing and looking at violence what the outcomes and implications of violence are, but we also know programs, processes, and definitions that we need to eliminate youth violence because it is preventable. We can't arrest our way out. She didn't say this, but others have said we can't arrest our way out of this. So, you know, there is hope. I think, you know, the with our efforts, our considered efforts, and we keep raising our voices, whenever that tension between a public health approach and a law enforcement approach comes in, we need law enforcement, but we also need to invest in opportunities for our young people.